This is Mother's opening prayer. Every service we would start with this. So if you'll repeat after me,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. How she opened any service that she started. I thought I would read something to you. This is from the Cross and Lotus Journal. I think some of you get a peek at it when it comes around. We send some here. This is True Seeds of Spirit Planted by the Master. I thought we would talk tonight about seeds. The seed is a beautiful and a wonderful thing, really, when you stop to think about it. All seeds, the seeds that are planted in the ground, the seed that is planted in the mother's body, and the seed of spirit which is planted in the individual devotee soul. Certainly all here can understand this Bible passage with this in mind. But there are many who come. They are drawn to God. Many are called, but few are chosen, has been said a million times. Not all make the effort, even though they have been chosen to go to God. The grace of God descends upon them, but as I said, it entails responsibility. It entails action on the part of the individuals involved. We cannot sit with our hands folded in our laps and say, God, give me the gift of thyself, of thy grace. Give me God realization. And expect it to happen in just that fashion, because it will not. God realization is the pearl of great price, and it is only obtained through paying the full price of complete and total surrender to God. Until the time comes when you dedicate every thought, every word, every action, and even your life to Him, these are the seeds which each and every master, who is truly a master, plants in the hearts of the disciples. Some come out of curiosity. They stay and they listen. Their minds are intrigued, but they go away because they do not even faintly understand what it is being spoken about. Their hearts are not open and ready to receive as yet. This is because they are all still drawn for the satisfaction of desires in the worldly sense, and they do not wish to tear themselves away. And they are coming to such a place, and hearing such a talk, and being given such truth is but another conversation piece for them, something which they can air what they think is their greatest knowledge when they go to their social functions. Then there are some, you see, Satan has actually taken them away. Then there are others who receive the seed in stony places, and that one is the one who heareth the word and is filled with joy, and yet is not deeply rooted enough in the Spirit. For when the tests come, the trials, the tribulations, which surely come to everyone who puts his feet upon the spiritual path, then that one is shaken, and he would rather give it up. He doesn't want to be disturbed, and especially when you come to this last mile. and mother quoting from the Bible, and he also received seed among the thorns is he that heareth the word, and the care of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becometh unfruitful. But for that one who is ready, that one who has enough of the world, who has realized that nothing, it is nothing but sackcloth and ashes, that the diamond that glitters was but a reflection of the great light of the soul, and so it is. This outer diamond that we think will give us wealth, that lures us with its brilliance, is nothing compared to the pearl of great price, which is God realization. The wealth, that gold, which is eternal in the spirit. What price is too great to pay for that? Even the price of death of the cross. So a couple of notes here. One is Mother told the story of the pearl of great price. And I don't know if it's something that's been told here or not, but you may know it, but I think still it's a good story. So there is a man who one day he saw a particular pearl. And he thought, oh, that's magnificent. In fact, it was the most perfect pearl in the entire world. He says, I want that pearl. So he goes to the man who owns the pearl and he says, I'd like to purchase that pearl. How much does it cost? This is a very long time ago. The man said, $1,000. $1,000. Well, at that time, that was an enormous amount of money. Lots and lots and lots of money. So the man thought, I'll bargain for this, huh? I'll bargain. So I'll offer you $400 for this. The man said, nothing doing. Price is set. $1,000 or nothing. The man wasn't satisfied. He thought, I still have to get a bargain here. $600 I'll offer. $600. No. Don't even bother offering. I won't take it. $1,000 only. The man offered $999. Sometimes we just want a bargain. We just want to say, oh, it came down a little bit. Makes us feel so good. The man said, no. $1,000 or nothing. Full price. So that's the way that we are with God, huh? We come, we listen, we get inspired, and we think, oh, that's so wonderful. Then the ego starts creeping in and says, oh, but you know, you have your comforts, and you, do you want to give up this? And what will other people think about you? So many things start to work in our head. And we don't want to pay the full price. So when Mother came here to Ananda Ashram in 1957, she had been with her guru, Paramahansa Yogananda, since 1925. She met Yogananda. He was touring the United States, came to Seattle where she was living. He gave such a wonderful talk. And afterwards, when he offered to shake hands with anyone who was leaving, Mother stood in line. Her heart was beating so hard. He shook her hand. He looked into her eyes, and she felt an electric shock, that Guru Shakti, that went from the top of her head to the bottom of the feet. And she would say, from that moment to this, I was his. Heart, mind, and soul. When he left the body in 1952, she felt like there is more for her to go through. She had attained a high state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi by that time. But she knew there is more for her to experience. And it was when Papa came that she felt inspired to come here only. So she and her husband sold everything that they had. House, furniture, clothes, everything. To come here. She was here for some time, and you can read those conversations that Swamiji wrote down and in Gospel of Swami Ramdas. Such wonderful. And he said, even that which is written, it just barely covers even just a little small portion of such wonderful conversations they had. But then Mother started to go through some very intense kind of sadhana. And she wanted to do pada puja to Papa, and she seemed to be in a very deep experience around this. Before this happened, Papa said, you have to throw everything into the ocean of God. You have to give it all. She had so much attachment for her children and for her husband. She put it all into the ocean. Would she ever return back to America? She didn't know. When they came here, they thought perhaps not. So everything was given. Everything was given. Nothing was held back for herself. And having gone through so many years with her own guru, Paramahansa Yogananda, she felt like she had missed something. She hadn't gotten the full advantage. So Mataji, in Mataji's characteristic way, press Papa, get everything from him. So she was always pressing, Papa, you must give me full realization. So Papa actually said, you will get it. You will get it. But she just gave him everything, and as a result of that, she was taken through these very powerful experiences. And what happened for her, as she went through these kundalini experiences and powerful experiences, she sat out on the porch of L Building. She was so heated with the kundalini heat that they had a bucket brigade, and they were pouring buckets of water over her, trying to cool her down. The heat was so tremendous inside of her. So going through all of this, she would be taken to the Bible and shown, this is what this really is talking about. When Jesus travels to a certain place, it's really talking about an interior experience. So we can see that also with India's scriptures as well. The outward stories are talking about an inward journey. When Ravana comes and takes Sita, Sita is the soul, the feminine, and Ravana is lust, is passions, and takes her south. What is south? South is the lower part of the spine and the centers that are there, and holds her captive there. So it's when we're in our spiritual sadhana and suddenly lust comes into us. We've not been perhaps experiencing too much of that. And suddenly it's there and it comes as a terrific battle. And we have to be able, Rama comes and rescues Sita. He has to fight the battle. Rescue the soul from those passions. And bring her back up north to Ayodhya, to the place of Rama, to the place here at the center of the eyebrows. So we lift the spiritual energy up and bring it here to this ajna, to this kutastha chaitanya that exists there. So this is the spiritual journey that goes on all over the world. Anyone who has a spine and a brain will travel the same path, because the path is exactly the same. And whether you're Occidental or Oriental, it makes no difference at all. The path is exactly the same. And as we draw these energies up through chanting Ramnam, through focusing our attention on God, many times I say we follow a fourfold path. A fourfold path. We follow the path of Karma Yoga, of Bhakti Yoga, Raja Yoga. I'm leaving one out. What's the other?
Karma Yoga.
Karma Yoga.
Yeah.
Bhakti Yoga. Raja Yoga. Raja Yoga. So, Bhakti Yoga, we have to have love and devotion for God, an attraction for God, and things of the Spirit. We have to cultivate that. Everything in the world tends to draw us out into the world and get focused on the world, and we don't have that attraction for God. When Papa talks about his experiences and getting pulled up into that state of bliss, he loved that state of bliss so much, he wouldn't even allow himself to sleep at times because he didn't want to forget God ever. So do we love God? Do we love the God experience? Do we love being in that joy? Do we love being in that uplifted experience? Because as we all know, sometimes we get that uplifted experience. And then the telephone rings. or some person starts talking to us, or we start involved in some activity, and our mind is drawn back out, and we forget all about God. Suddenly, like it never existed at all. So we love God so that we're always focused on Him. So in Karma Yoga, we learn how to be in union with God in activity. In activity. So we feel God flowing through us. We're the machine. God is the operator of the machine. Can we feel that? Can we sense it? If we're doing any activity at all, can we feel that it is God's intelligence, God's life energy that's flowing through us? This is entering into karma yoga, yoga in action, union with God in activity. And we have this bhakti yoga, we're attracted to God. We feel this overwhelming attraction for God and want that only. And then we enter into raja yoga, which Papa talks about as we chant Ram Nam. And eventually the mind is lifted up and we've come into that still state. And in that still state, we enter into meditation. And in that meditation, we begin to feel ourselves that union with God in that deep interior sense. So without these combination of activities, we can draw from all of these and make ourselves part and parcel our entire lives. We cannot divide up our life and say, well, this is going down to the Mandir or up to the Bhajan Hall. This is my time to chant to God. But when I get back to my place, I get busy with this and that and the other thing, and I'm talking with somebody, and it completely goes out of my mind. For us to go the whole way, it's the pearl of great price. Not $400, not $600, not even $999.90. No bargains. 100%. So what if we don't have that kind of passion for God, that kind of attraction for God? Then what can we do? Then we can pray to God. We must pray to God. God, you awaken yourself in me. You awaken yourself in me. And you give me that love. You give me that attraction. He must do it. He must do it. Because we can do some, and there's something for us to do. We have to give ourselves 100%. As Mother said, we just can't sit like this and, oh God, you give me God realization, and I don't do anything. It doesn't work that way. And yet, as we feel this divine spirit start to flow in us, we realize that's way beyond me. I can't produce that. I can't make that happen. This feeling of God, this peace, this bliss, this upliftment, that's something that comes to me. And that's the real action. That's the real activity. When we have that feeling, when we have that connection with God, then it's a matter of attuning our mind to God. God, what would you have for me to do in this moment? And now this moment. And now this moment. And that we trust in God completely, that He wants what is best for us. That if we turn our mind and our body and our soul over to Him, He will do what is best for us. We trust that completely. Sometimes we think, well, maybe I will disappear. Or maybe I won't be happy. Maybe God will take me into a cave and it'll be dusty and I won't like it there and He'll make my life miserable. But look at Papa. When he went to caves, he had a strange attraction for caves. And he lived that life for a certain amount of time. But then God brought him back into the world. Sometimes he wanted to escape back to a cave and said, oh, this is too much with Mother Hamilton. He said, Mother, do not have an ashram. They're just a nest of troubles. So she took him as word. She never had an ashram, never organization. So that was her way of operating. And we thank God that Papa created an ashram and some place for us all to come and to be able to focus on God. But we must really think about that 1,000%, that pearl of great price. Why do we get stuck? We have to break down those doors, break down those barriers. Demand of God that He give us greater intensity, greater passion for Him, that our mind become completely focused on Him. Sometimes we go through what's called a honeymoon period. Oh God, everything's perfect, I'm so inspired, and we go through a long dry desert. I don't feel God. It seems like before God was so present and now He's so far away. Every devotee goes through that. Every aspirant goes through that. And it separates out those who are real sadhakas from those who will just get swept back into the world again. The saying in the Bible, the saying of Jesus, there are many are chosen, many are called, but few are chosen. But I say it a little bit differently. Many are called, but few choose. And when things are going smooth and going well, it's easy, huh? But when they start going uphill and it's difficult, we go through one of those desert periods where we feel dry as dust, devotion isn't there, feeling of God isn't there, then we have to keep going. We have to keep pursuing. And to keep going after that pearl of great price. Now, what happens if we do that? More and more and more, God will lift us up. We'll feel that bliss. We'll feel that peace. We'll feel that joy. It'll start to penetrate into the very cells of our being. We feel ourselves positively charged with that bliss, with that joy. We feel that thrill running up our spine and going up out of the top of our head, and out of that we feel a tremendous expansiveness out into all consciousness. And in that comes the knowledge that we are one with God. Now there cannot be any ego in there at all. Because through that up and down cycle that we go through, when we go through the deserts and the difficult times and then back up, it's like God is scouring out the inside of our cups. He's emptying us of everything that we have. I remember once I was walking up a hill and God just seemed to suck all the, like a huge syringe just sucked all the life energy out of me completely. All I just could do is just stand there. I couldn't even take one more step forward. And I thought, God, you're showing me that I don't have anything without you. This is an empty vessel. Withdraw that life energy, withdraw that God force inside of me. I drop like a wet rag right on the floor right here. Gone. Out. You're showing me that. And that I can't take a step. I can't breathe a breath. I can't even have a thought. This is what I was understanding on such a deep level in that moment. And that if I'm even able to live for a minute more, it's completely by your grace. So when He empties us out that way, He shows us the truth of what we've been taught. We can read Papa's books, any great master's books, any of the great Vedas, any of the great scriptures of the world. And when that inspires us and helps us to direct our mind, it's good. But it's not enough. It's not enough. We have to actually go the way. We have to actually take the steps, one in front of another. Sometimes, and I think it's a danger that we have to be cautious of. Of course, we hold Papa, Mataji, Swamiji up in such high self-esteem. And well, we should. Well, we should. But we should not put them up so high that we don't think we can follow in their footsteps. They're not happy with that. They want us to follow. They're saying, when Jesus said, I am the way, he's saying, I am the way. Follow me. Follow in these footsteps and I'll take you to the top. He's not saying, just believe in me and somehow you'll get salvation at the end of your life. No. He's saying, I am the way. And Papa says, I am the way. Now that doesn't mean we have to go to a cave or we have to have just one piece of cloth and wander around without any money or anything. It's just exactly as God directs us. Each one of our path is individualized to us, exactly suited for what we need. So whatever life has given you, wherever life has placed you, it's perfect for you. Unless God is prompting you to change something about the externals of your life, they're perfect for you. And sometimes we can say, well, if I didn't have so many responsibilities, so many duties, so much of this, if I didn't have these people bothering me all the time, then I could concentrate on God. Get rid of that thought. That's the ego whispering in your ear. That's convincing you that you cannot have God. Your life is perfect exactly where you're at. And when you accept that and accept God has put you exactly perfectly where you belong, then look to how to fulfill God's will exactly where you're at. The people who you're around, cultivate seeing God in them. Serving God in them, loving God in them. Whatever activities He's given you, this is your karma yoga. Practice being the instrument and God is the operator of the instrument. Practice that in your mind. Feel yourself as you're walking around, that you're an extension of God. Practice seeing through your eyes that this world is God. At first it's practice. At first it's trying, but then the reality of the experience begins to come and you get little glimpses here and there. This person here, you see and feel God in that form, but not everybody. And then gradually that begins to expand. As Swami Satchitananda talked about, have you expanded your circle of love? Now, sometimes we think, I need to love. I need to love. But the reality is the kind of love he's talking about is divine love. And divine love isn't something that you do. Divine love is something that happens through you. You feel that divine love pouring through you. Most of us are, I like you because you like me. If you don't like me, I don't like you. If you don't behave the way I think you should behave, I don't like you. You're out. So that's how the human mind, it has a ledger book. And a ledger book has deposits and withdrawals up there. And if somebody that we know, they do some nice things for us, oh, that feels so nice. Oh, you complimented me today. Oh, you smiled at me today. All deposits in the ledger book. But do something against me, oh, black mark over there. Withdrawal from the bank. Now you're not so much in my favor any longer. So that's, of course, that's how we are as human beings. But divine love operates separately from that. Divine love is a flow through the heart itself. And it's an active flow. It's not something you have to just imagine. When you have it, when you feel it, it's a real experience. But even while you're having that flow of divine love, somebody does something that's cruel. Somebody does something that's difficult. And suddenly you feel yourself collapsing, drawing in. It's like a dam in the river. And suddenly love is not flowing anymore. So our part in there is to learn, all right, I don't want to be angry at this person and not allow this love to flow. So I have to let go of my expectations. My expectations about how the world should be. And when the world doesn't go the way I think it should, I close up. This keeps God from expressing himself through us. Very natural, very human thing to do. But spiritually, deadly. Stops us cold. And if we get stopped cold like that, we stay stopped cold until heart starts to flow again. Sometimes it's the death of somebody close to us. It hurts. It hurts the heart. So we close the heart up. I don't want to feel that pain. So I close the heart up. But we don't love. One time I was sitting with Mother Hamilton, and we were having a meal in a restaurant. But there was a group, about 20 people or so, who there with her. And so Mother had this capacity. I'd seen it before. I'd been sitting next to her, and she'd start to talk to somebody, and it was like a field surrounded the two of them. And even though I was sitting right next to her, I couldn't hear what she was saying. I couldn't understand it. I tried to eavesdrop. I tried to lean forward more. And what is she saying? Couldn't do it. Well, this night was my turn. And I felt this field just envelop the two of us. Busy restaurant, things, people talking, all kinds of noise. Suddenly, it was a field that just included her and I. Only. Like we were the only two people in that room. And she looked at me and she said, "Why don't you love me completely? Why don't you love me completely?" I immediately knew what she was talking about, because I had had my heart hurt badly some years before, and I realized I had closed my heart up. And so she said then, if you don't love God completely, you will never realize him. It went off like a bomb inside of me. It disturbed me. It distressed me. I didn't know, do I open myself up to that kind of potential pain again? Of losing someone that I care about so much? So I struggled with it for about 2 weeks. And finally, at the end of 2 weeks, I thought, I don't care what cost, what price it may demand of me. I have to love completely. I have to open my heart. Now, I had to decide. Nobody could decide for me. She threw the gauntlet down. She threw the challenge down. Unless you do this, you won't have it. But I had to choose. Every one of us have those points that we guard, that we want to keep private, and we have a right to keep them private. But if we don't give ourselves that 1,000%, if we don't pay the $1,000 for the pearl, we won't have it. And $999.99 won't suffice. It won't do it. It's not enough. So it's 100% of ourselves. Every part of ourselves. Heart, mind, soul. But when we do that, we allow God to start flowing into us. His grace will take us to his very self. And as Mother said, you'll never regret it. You'll never regret it. It doesn't necessarily make it easier when the moment comes when we're tested. And yet we have to be that fertile ground. When the seed comes in, it finds fertile ground for that to come up, for that tree to come up. When that seed was planted by Papa's guru and it went in, what fertile ground it found. Starts shooting out roots, starts shooting out stalk going towards the sky. So beautiful. So beautiful. And we can think to ourselves, I'm not Papa. I couldn't do what Papa did. You don't have to do exactly what Papa did in the sense that following the outer details. You just have to do what Papa did in terms of giving yourself over completely to God. And you can choose not to. You can choose not to. And when you don't get God completely. But that's a terrible thing to do to yourself. Nobody judges you. God does not judge you. It's just simply we're left out in the cold. We never get to that state of realization that in our heart of hearts we want so tremendously. So with that being said, are there any questions, any thoughts, any observations about your own sadhana, about your own path to God realization? Oh, good. No questions means you're all doing swimmingly well. Things just going smoothly, no problems. It happens to everyone, first of all. Sometimes, and I think oftentimes, I find this true everywhere. We're on the spiritual path. We read the stories of Papa and Mataji and others, and we feel like, I'm such a poor devotee. You know, we all feel isolated in the problems. Like we're the only ones to have that. It's not true. Everyone shares in the difficulties, in the problems. And so when we're a closed seed, we can feel it in ourselves. We feel tight. We don't feel like we're really expanding in the way that we want to be. So first of all, we recognize that that's part of the ego mind. The ego mind wants to contract. It wants to protect. It wants to keep what it has and not risk it into expansiveness. So that's the battle. Human ego is contractive. Spirit is expansive. And that tension, that fight that goes on, happens for everybody. But what happens in a seed? A seed is very compact, isn't it? It has the shell around it, but it gets in the right circumstances. It gets in the right soil. It gets a little bit of water. And what happens? It breaks through that shell. Its desire for growth is so great, it shoots something down into the ground, and then something else breaks through the top of it and starts shooting up to the surface and out toward the light. So what we pray for to God, recognizing we feel tight, we feel contracted, we just say, God, you give me the life energy, you give me the strength, you give me the desire to break through this shell. So we throw our reliance upon God. And then with that quiet listening voice, whatever He prompts us to do then. You do this, you do that, go over here now, do this. Oh, time to go to the bhajan hall, time to do more ramnam, time to go into Swamiji's room and sit quietly in silence. Whatever comes into our mind then, we do. With courage, without any thought of doing anything else than what God is prompting us to do in that moment. And then through that, you'll feel a growing force inside of you. Now, sometimes that can produce tremendous pain. Tremendous pain, because it's that expansiveness of spirit that's trying to break through that shell, that outer hard shell. And sometimes that's very painful, but that's not wrong. It's not bad. Sometimes in your heart, you'll even feel like I'm having a heart attack. It's just so painful there. But you allow that to continue because that's the Spirit of God growing inside of you. And then suddenly it breaks open the seed and then you're free of that. You expand. And then You feel that God flowing through you more than ever before. So this is the ups and downs in the path. Then we go back down into the valley and some other difficulty comes. And then we pray to God and then we're taken up to a peak again. And then back down again. And so on. From a human standpoint, that's what it's like. But if we look at it from a God standpoint, it's a steady climb up to the heights of realization. So praying to God, throwing your complete reliance on Him, and then making yourself available for whatever He prompts you to do. You wake up in the middle of the night, you go, oh, I just want to go back to sleep. God says, no, you sit up for a little while and you just chant my name or you meditate on me. All right. Okay, sometime like that, all right, you can lay back down again. Or you stay up through the night, it's all right. So in your mind, you stay open to whatever His direction is. Even when it's inconvenient. Because that's the pearl of great price. We're willing to do what He prompts us to do. And if we don't do it, all right, I fell down there. That wasn't so good. Okay, I want to redouble my efforts. And keep thinking of God, chanting God's name inwardly, chanting, mentally chanting. Can be with words too, but most of all mentally, taking it deeper, feeling the vibration of God. If we only think God's name, it's kind of dry. It can get dry. But when we feel the presence of God as we chant, we feel the vibration of God, that is what gives us the power and the attraction to keep going. Oh, I like that. I like that peace. I like that joy. I like that love. I like that expansiveness. I want to keep that going. Keep it going. Like that. So it's natural. It's what everybody goes through. Contraction, that's the ego mind. Expansion is God inside of you.
While meditating, there are a lot of thoughts. Then they gradually come down. And a feeling of peace begins.
Yes.
But sometimes that peace leaves more and there is a dullness to it. And sometimes you end up becoming drowsy.
Yes.
So how to overcome that dullness?
Sleep is a tremendous obstacle. We can be sitting and meditating and, I'm just so tired. I just can't even. It takes us, it's like a drug that comes into us. And then we think, maybe I'll go up and have a cup of tea. Oh, now I'm all awake. No problems. I feel completely awake. Well, maybe I should sit down to meditate again. Oh, I'm just so tired. I can't even hardly stay awake. So that's one of the tricks of the ego, you might say. It's something that comes on us and we have to keep going through it. We have to go through that. So sometimes it's useful to get up, walk around a little bit, maybe some chanting and get the body moving and then come back and sit back down again. And keep going through that until we get through that obstacle of sleep. Recognizing that comes on, I think anyone who's ever tried to meditate has run into that exact same problem. And that you keep working at it until you get through it. And then it doesn't bother you anymore. Then you feel that life energy, that prana flowing into you fresh. And you realize you're plugging into the very source of life. And then that sleep problem doesn't disturb you any longer. But everybody goes through that. So see, sometimes we can feel, this is just my problem. Why am I like this? Why does this happen to me? We don't realize that it happens to everybody on the journey. Everything that you face has been faced by somebody else. One time I was thinking to God, I was thinking of Papa, I was thinking of the great masters, and I thought, oh, they must look down on us as so many tiny little ants. So pathetic, our efforts, we're just so little to them. God said, no, in my mind. He showed me, he said, it's not like that. They look out through our eyes. They look out through our experiences, because whatever we're facing, they face at some time in their evolution, either in that particular lifetime that we know about or some other lifetime, they experience exactly what we're going through. So they look out through your eyes. They look out through your experience. They know exactly what that is. But they know something more, because they eventually broke through whatever that difficulty it is that we're having to deal with. And they see that they went on completely to find the goal of goals. And they see that about us too. We just see our life like a little snapshot. You take a picture of somebody, that's true in that particular moment, whatever that picture is. But they look at our lives like a bird circling high up in the air, and they see all the life that has brought us to this moment. They also see where we're going to and the glorious end of realization that eventually we'll have. So they see more about ourselves than what we see. And they see hope. They see joy. They see the ultimate consummation that we're afraid we'll never get, because we're so weak, because we're so slow, because we don't do what we should do. They see it building, building, building. You know, Papa would say, the more you go away from God, the more miserable you get, and eventually you'll turn around and you'll go back to God. And you see the life of so many saints. You see the life of Valmiki. He's such a crazy man. Used to rob people. Used to kill people. But when he turned his life around, he shot off to God like a flaming arrow. So sometimes you see somebody, you say, they're the worst of people. They're a terrible person. But you never know. Because they could get turned towards God and they could shoot past you like a flaming arrow. You think, whoa, how did that happen? And they get to God before any of the rest of us. And they were the worst of the worst. But when they got turned around, they were just as dedicated to God as they were to being a nasty person. So we can't judge the world. We really can't judge people. We don't know how near or how far anybody is. Even Papa, in his state of realization, somebody said, do you always know if somebody's God-realized when you meet them? And Papa said, no, I don't always know. I thought, if Papa doesn't always know, then who am I to judge anyone? So I better play it safe and treat everyone as if they're God-realized. They're God in human form right here. That's the safe thing to do. So we drop judgments. We all have our preferences. We all have our preferences. Maybe you like chocolate ice cream and I like vanilla ice cream. Okay, you know, that's all right. We have our preferences. But being judgmental is more than that. You're wrong, I would say, for liking chocolate ice cream. You shouldn't like it. You shouldn't have any. Eat only vanilla. See, that's being judgmental. We exercise judgment, but we should not be judgmental. I don't know about you. I don't know about your journey. I don't know about what you've been through. What I do know is the way that you're acting is not an indication of a happy person. And I'm sorry for you for that. I wish that you were a happy person. I wish you had joy. A happy person would not speak to other people like that. A happy person, somebody who saw God in other people, would not treat other people like that. I'm sorry that you don't do that. I'm sorry you're in such pain. And then you can actually have compassion for that person rather than heaping judgments on them. It's not always easy to do, is it? Mind is very quick. Jumps in there. No, they shouldn't be doing that. What's wrong with that person? They're not very educated. They're not very sophisticated. They're not very spiritual. So many things run through our mind. Are we keeping our mind on God? Are we chanting Ram Nam? Are we practicing seeing God in everyone? How about if we look in the mirror in that moment? How do we look as sadhakas? If we're having that kind of a judgment, if we're not practicing seeing God in them, if we're not loving them, if we're not having compassion for them, if we're not thinking about how we might be able to serve them. This person is in pain. Is there something for me to be able to do? Perhaps we can pray for that person. See them. I wish for you happiness. I wish for you peace. I wish for you joy. I'm sorry that you're in so much pain. When we're like that, we're thinking like God thinks. Oh, my child, come to me. Come to me. Love me, and you will be healed of all of that pain, of all of that sorrow. You know, the Buddha said what? Life is suffering. Doesn't that sound a little harsh? Life is suffering. And we think, okay, my life's okay. It's not necessarily suffering. But what he means is when we're living in a state of separation from God, we're in a state of suffering. Because we'll go through the peaks and the valleys. And for every pleasure, there will be at least a pain. Maybe two pains. So he says it's suffering because you're not free. But we're like a caged bird sitting in the cage thinking, well, life is okay. But it's only because we don't know what it's like to be outside of the cage yet. That's why we are not hungry for God. That's why we don't aspire for Him. We haven't yet known so deeply what we're missing. When we do, then we'll be like Papa. Going straight to the goal. Not to the left, not to the right, nothing. Just straight to the goal. Nothing will stop us. So our greatest prayer is awaken that kind of desire in me so that I feel that. I want that more than anything else. And as Jesus said, if a father is asked by his son for some bread, will he give him a stone? No. He'll give him some bread. Something to eat. If you ask God, he's not going to give you a rock. You're such a bad person. I'm just going to sink you right here. That's not how God thinks. He says, even if your human father can love you that well, not to give you a rock when you ask for some bread, how much more will your heavenly Father reward you when you ask him for more love for him, more desire for him? He will not abandon you. He will not abandon you.
Things will happen better than when we plan. When we know that, even when we know that, planning tendency doesn't stop.
Planning is not the problem. Planning, unless it's driven by the ego. How do we know whether it's ego or not? If it's rooted in fear or desire nature, then we can say, That's ego planning. But having a plan about tomorrow isn't the problem. It's when we're separated from God. And we feel like, I have to do everything. And I have to plan. And I have to make this happen. And that separates us from God. And we're acting out of fear or kind of a graspiness. I want. So when we come back into feeling our connection with God, plans can be there. Right now, I had planned to be here at Ananda Ashram until kind of the end of November. November 24th, 25th, wasn't exactly set. But some devotee who has done so much for the work that I do there and has never asked for one thing. His wife just left the body. So I asked his daughter, who's an adult person, but I asked her, I said, what would the family like? What would the family like? Because custom in the West is within a week or so you have the funeral service. Huh? So we could have it in December when I return, or we could have it sooner. What would the family like? She said, we don't want to ask. I said, I'm asking. You can ask. She said, we don't want to ask, but my dad said it would be very painful to wait until December. It'd be very painful in his heart if I did not return until December. He's never asked. He's given so much. He's never asked for one thing. He's still not asking. She's asking. She's telling. I feel love like a magnet drawing me. I have to go. Papa's taking me. I have to go. How can I allow him to be in that kind of pain? So we change our plans. We have plans. They get changed. Why? I would rather stay here. I would rather stay with all of you. So much love, so much God aspiration, so much everything. God's bringing me back. So I change plans. Why? Because I feel that inner prompting. Not just because somebody's asking. I feel that magnet. I feel that draw. I feel God prompting me to do so. So plans are there, but plans change. So Mother would say, make a skeletal plan for the future. Make a like a skeleton. And then let God fill in all the details. But she says, even then, God may just wipe out the skeleton and start fresh. Brand new. Now, ultimately, any one of us at any moment could drop the body like that. We're walking along thinking we're all right. Some heart attack, some car accident, something happens, bang. Life's over. All our plans are gone. In a second, huh? Boom. But I was going to do this and this and this. No. All gone. So if we live our life in such a way that we feel that we are the instrument, God is the operator of the instrument, and at any moment He might take us away like that. When Mother was here, there was one Methodist minister who was also here for some time. So he had read Papa's books about In Quest of God and Vision, wandering all over, having all kinds of adventures all through India. So he said, Papa, next time God prompts you to go someplace, I want to be there. Huh? So one day, Papa is standing out there and he tells this minister, he says, Ram is prompting Ram Dass to go across this field. Didn't used to be any trees out here. I've seen photographs, nothing, just a big field. Oh, the man, visions, dreams, oh, adventures, what's going to happen? You know, anything's possible. You're with Papa. So Papa's and he are walking halfway across the field. They get halfway across. Suddenly, Papa turns around, starts walking back to the ashram. The man says, what, Papa? I thought we were going across the field. He said we were, Papa says. But when Ram Dass got halfway across the field, Ram told Ram Dass to turn around and go back. Such surrender. Now, Papa could think, oh, what will this fellow think of me? You know, I told him I was going across the field. I should go across the field. I shouldn't turn around. I look like a crazy man. But Papa didn't care, did he? Remember the time he's walking through the town and some fellow says, hey, look at that person. He's half cracked. He's half cracked. Papa turns around, goes back to him, says, Ram Dass is not half cracked. He's fully cracked. He didn't mind what that person thought. Because he was living in God consciousness. He was going according to God's prompting. It's hard though, isn't it? What does somebody else think? Is that proper? Is that the right thing to do? Now I know in this culture, in this country, you know, for Mataji, she moves away and then she comes, she has one piece of cloth, she comes to the ashram where Papa is there, the attendant for Papa, he leaves. And many people thought, improper. But Papa said, this is your home now. And they knew what they were about. They knew the purity, they knew everything that they were about. They didn't care what anybody else thought. That's hard, isn't it? It's difficult. But when you know in your heart, this is God's prompting, that's the pearl of great price. And Mataji paid a price, didn't she? She was attacked. Her back was injured. It was never proper again after that. Gave her pain for the rest of her life. These are not easy things. We may turn around and say, that's too difficult for me. But if we do, and we're not paying that pearl of great price, we'll never get the pearl. No $999.99, that won't even purchase it. So that's the amount of surrender, the amount of love we have for God, knowing that God wants what is best for us, always. He always wants what is best for us. And when we live according to His will and His love and His light, then He will lift us up into His kingdom. That kingdom of heaven, there is peace and bliss, ever new joy. Ever new joy. We're so accustomed to things having a certain shelf life. It's good for so long and then it's gone. In America we have Christmas. Children, I want this, I want that for Christmas. Santa Claus should bring it to me. Please, 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 for months there can be, oh, that's all that I want. They finally, the day comes, they get their gift, and 2 months later it's out in the rain rusting away, forgotten. Mind is on to the next thing. One little girl, she's praying to God. God, for Christmas, I want 1,000 dolls. Why, I don't know, but she wanted 1,000 dolls, you know, all different. So her father hears her praying like that. She's in her room praying like that. So Christmas comes. She, of course, doesn't get 1,000 dolls. So her father says, well, I guess God did not answer your prayers. And this little girl said, yes, He did. He just said, no. Sometimes God just says no. We say, this is what I want. No. Doesn't mean He didn't answer our prayers. See what faith she had. So when we accept that what God does is for our highest good, no matter what, how it appears, then we have that peace, that inner assurance that He is always with us.